turn this morning to Hebrews chapter 11. We're in the middle of this great chapter of faith. Hebrews chapter 11, we'll drop in a few moments into verse 23. You almost never see a crisis coming before it lands in your life, but sooner or later it will. Catherine and I were sitting at home on Sunday afternoon 2 weeks ago with our daughter Abby, and she had a grand mal seizure. Scared the death out of us. We didn't know what was going on, called the ambulance, went to the hospital, began a process of going to doctors, and we found out that at 19 she had had a stroke, which led to a couple of seizures. She is doing better, but we still don't know what caused them. Abby had shared with her mother and I some things that she had been writing in her devotion, in her journal. And she gave me permission to share this. This was on, this would have been on Monday. Today I've been struggling with having peace with everything that's going on with me. I'm a very social person, and because of some recent events in my life, I cannot drive for 6 months. It's hard for me to rely on other people to take me places because I feel like I'm inconveniencing other people, but at the same time, I hate being stuck at home. Anyways, long paragraph there basically to say I'm struggling with peace and patience in my life right now. Wouldn't you know, one of the times that I open my Bible, God shows me He is the only one who can give me complete peace. John 14:27. I am leaving you with a gift, peace of mind and heart, and the peace I give is a gift the world cannot give, so don't be troubled or afraid. Isn't it amazing how God speaks to you through His Word and shows and tells you exactly what you need to hear and see? I'm 19 years old, and I had a stroke and two seizures. I have no idea why, and I'm scared out of my mind. I can't drive for 6 months, which is killing me, and yet here is God telling me that if I just ask Him, He will give me a kind of peace that nothing and no one on earth could ever give. The main point of Hebrews chapter 11 is to endure, to not quit, not give up. When these crises come into your life, and they will, you're being tested. The book of Hebrews is written to a people who are going through very dark times. They're struggling. They thought that Jesus was going to return, and He hasn't. They thought that things would be easier than they were, and they aren't. Some of them are abandoning the Christian faith completely and going back to Judaism. Some of them have quit coming to church because of their discouragement, and some of them just simply don't know where to turn. They are like you and I. The enemy has us in his sights, and he will stop at nothing to derail us from faith. And it's clear in Hebrews chapter 11 that the key to enduring, the key to hanging on, is faith. Faith in the one true God who exists and who makes and keeps promises to His people. The author here in Hebrews chapter 11 defines faith at the beginning of chapter 11, and then he gives a long series of examples of faith from the Old Testament. Men and women who look beyond their own lives to the promises of God and the fulfillment of those promises in the future. Each of these men and women wanted something more than this life could offer. Now, here in this paragraph, verse 23 down through verse 31, I think the author is really answering the question, how do you handle a crisis? These individuals, particularly most prominently Moses, went through a series of tests. Would these followers of God endure? What do you do when your physical safety is at risk? When you have to choose between your lifestyle and your Lord? When your personal wealth is in danger? When the enemy is close on your heels? When victory seems impossible? What do you do when God's plan runs contrary to everything that you have previously known and loved? How will you endure when the crisis hits? The answer, of course, is by faith. The way that you and I endure in the midst of life tests and hard circumstances is by faith. So the question is, am I going to build my security on myself, on my own ability to persuade people, on my own ability to conquer any mountain, on my job, on my IRA? Or will I trust in the one who made me for himself in his own image and likeness and glory? Hebrews chapter 11 says that enduring faith sees that the real reward is over the horizon. The real reward is coming. And this paragraph here, verse 23 to 31, really teaches that faith that endures life crisis results from knowing God's reward is greater than the storm. Faith that endures results from knowing that the reward that is coming, what God has promised, is greater than any storm that I am going through presently. Now, this paragraph that we're in this morning has seven, count them, seven crises. The first four are about Moses personally, and then the next three are about the Exodus and going through the wilderness and Joshua. And so we have these crises for Moses of his birth and his identity and the Exodus and then later on the Passover and crossing the Red Sea and coming into Jericho and the whole incident with Rahab. What is it about faith that endures through a crisis? What do we learn from Moses and Joshua and Rahab and the children of Israel that will keep us going when life gets hard and those unexpected incidents happen in our lives? Five characteristics of enduring faith. Number one, faith gives courage and love to overcome the fear of death. Faith gives courage and love to overcome the fear of death. Verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that the child was beautiful and they were not afraid of the king's edict. Now, this describes the heroic faith of Moses' parents, Amram and Jochebed, two people you may have never heard of, but they are great heroes of faith. Pardon me. They were Levites. They had another son, Aaron, who would become the father of the priest and the great high priest himself. This crisis came because Moses hated the Jews, and his hatred was so intense that he ordered that all male children would be killed at birth. When the midwives refused to do the deed, he ordered that every single baby boy be thrown into the Nile as lunch for the crocodiles. Exodus chapter 1, verse 22. Pharaoh commanded all his people, every son that is born to the Hebrews, you shall cast into the Nile, but you shall let every daughter live. Now, there are a couple of threats implied here, two threats. The first threat, obviously, is to the child. He's going to kill all the male children. But there's a second threat here, and that is that you must obey. This is the command of the king of the most powerful nation on earth. And you must obey what he tells you to do, or you are going to face death. So what did Moses' mother do? What did Jochebed do? The woman conceived, bore a son, and when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him 3 months. It's been my privilege to go up to the hospital quite a bit over the years and see new babies. I've never yet had a family say, oh, this is an ugly baby. And Jochebed took a look at Moses and said, this is a beautiful kid. It's a fine child. Ancient tradition, which may or may not be true, we really don't know, but ancient tradition says that Jochebed had an inkling that God was going to do something special with Moses. And she was talking about more than just his physical appearance, but that God had his favor set on this child. And so it says here that they were not afraid of the king's edict in Hebrews 11:23. Their confidence in God's power outweighed the fear of reprisal. So what we learn from Hebrews is faith says, I will not be controlled by the fear of death. For Amram and Jochebed, their act of courage against the king, an act of love toward their son, came from faith. And Hebrews 11:1 gives assurance that God is, God exists, and he keeps his promises. And those who die, those who actually give up their lives in the path of love, receive a reward that is far better, that far exceeds anything this world can give to those who save themselves. God makes promises to keep us brave in the face of risk and death. Just flip over one page to chapter 13, verse 6. Chapter 13, verse 6. So we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? So we learn a couple of things about faith here, don't we? The true kind of faith that God is calling us to, the kind of faith that endures. Faith in God takes risk for love. Faith in God is willing to go places of danger for the sake of the gospel. It goes to places that are outside of our own personal comfort zone. It's willing to work with people who have diseases like AIDS. It's willing to move into a neighborhood to plant a church where you would never live if you had your own choice. But it also acts prudently. It takes risk, but it acts wisely. You see here that Moses' parents hid the baby for 3 months. There are some people who say, well, we trust in God. We don't need to seek medical treatment for our kid. Well, that's not wisdom, and that's not biblical. That's foolishness. Moses' parents acted wisely. The edict came down, so they hid the baby. They didn't just say, God is going to preserve him, and walk down the street with a screaming kid so that everyone would know that they had a baby boy. No, they hid him. The kind of faith that endures is faith that trusts God even in the face of great risk, because the reward of trusting God far exceeds anything that you might lose in this life. Number two, here's another characteristic of this kind of faith that endures. Faith chooses the reward of heaven over the treasures of earth. Faith chooses the reward of heaven over the treasures of earth. Verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Now, what's this all about, this son of Pharaoh's daughter? It seems that Egyptologists say that the son of Pharaoh's daughter is the direct heir of the king. Now, why is not Pharaoh's son the one who is the heir of the king? Why is it the son of Pharaoh's daughter? Well, because in Pharaoh's household, Pharaoh wanted to make sure that he had at least 75% stake in his heir. And as perverse as it may sound, this is actually what happened in Egypt. Pharaoh would marry a wife, and then the daughter that came from that wife, he would marry that daughter, and then he would have his heir by that daughter. So his grandson was also his son, and his grandson had 75% of his genes. Now you can imagine what that would do to a person's physical health. If you have a son who is also your grandson, very likely you're going to have huge physical handicaps and all kinds of health problems. And if you look at the record in the mummies, they did have lots of huge health problems. So as a result, it would seem that it became very convenient for Pharaoh to have an adopted heir. Someone who maybe didn't have his genes, but was his family and was his grandson. Now, we can't prove all of this from history, but Egyptologists do suggest this. So the son of Pharaoh's daughter, you see, was actually first in line to become the king of Egypt, the Pharaoh of all the earth. This limitless wealth of Egypt. And whatever you think of Egypt, Egypt didn't have fantastic military power like Rome or the nations of Mesopotamia. But what Egypt did possess was wealth that was far greater than any other nation on earth. Moses made a choice. He would exchange the temporary joy that he could have in being the son of Pharaoh's daughter and gaining all the wealth of this world, he would exchange that for the hardship of being one of God's true people. Now, why in the world would Moses give up being the son of Pharaoh's daughter? Because of his faith, what he believed. What did Moses believe? Moses believed that the Israelites, even though they were enslaved, were the people of the one true God. Some would suggest that this is actually insanity. This is crazy to give up the most powerful position in all the earth. Excuse me, just getting over a cold. Giving up the most powerful position in all the earth in order to identify with people who are enslaved, people who have nothing, people who make mud bricks without straw. Moses chose, you see, to be the son of a higher king. He chose greater pleasure that will last. He chose the eternal reward of Christ. He chose something far more significant than being the son of Pharaoh's daughter. What if the world were handed to you on a platter? What if you could have all of Donald Trump's wealth and all of Bill Gates' possessions and companies? What if you could be the next one in the Oval Office? Would you exchange that for the wealth of heaven? Moses had a choice to make, and he said, I choose Christ, verse 25 and 26. Choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin, he considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Now, did Moses know about Messiah? Did Moses know about Jesus Christ? I mean, Moses lived 1,400 years before Jesus. What is this choosing the reproach of Christ? Talking about the promised one. The one who would crush the serpent's head. The one of whom the prophets had spoken. The one of whom God was pointing to. This is the one who would come. And that's who he is choosing to stake his whole life and identity on. Faith that endures chooses the reward of heaven over the treasures of earth. Now, I want to read another letter. I don't know who wrote this. I received this week, and if you didn't intend for me to read this, I apologize, but you gave it to me, and you didn't sign your name, so I'm going to read it anyway. Normally, I got to admit to you, normally I don't like these letters that aren't signed. That doesn't bode well, but this one does. My family and I want to share a way in which God has recently blessed us. When Graham began the new building campaign in January 2011, my family and I decided that in addition to our normal offering, we would pledge 5% of our gross income each year to the building fund. In addition to this commitment, we began to pray for more opportunities to give and chose to increase our giving in other areas of ministry as well. By the end of 2011, we were so close to running out of money that, for the first time ever, we borrowed from a family member to make sure our bills were paid on time. We didn't end up needing the money, but it was very close. God faithfully carried us through the first year of increased giving. In January 2012, I had an opportunity to interview for a new position at work. I prepared for the interview, but it did not go well. Thankfully, this opportunity wasn't of man, but of God, and I was offered the position. When I was told what my initial pay raise would be, I couldn't help but smile. It was almost exactly twice our annual pledge to the building fund. In response to this blessing, we are doubling our building fund commitment, increasing our general giving, and praying for more opportunities to invest in the eternal. Psalm 146, verse 5 and 6. Blessed is he whose help is the God of Jacob, whose hope is in the Lord his God, the maker of heaven and earth, the sea and everything in them, the Lord who remains faithful forever. Faith chooses the reward of heaven over the treasure of earth. Number three, the kind of faith that endures is faith that endures the world's wrath without fear because God reigns. Faith endures the world's wrath without fear because God reigns. Verse 27. By faith, he left Egypt, talking about Moses, he left Egypt not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Moses endured. When he left Egypt, he endured because he could see God. Now, question, which departure from Egypt is this talking about? Is this talking about his first departure from Egypt when he ran away after killing the fellow and escaping and now identifying with the people of God? Or is this talking later about the exodus from Egypt 40 years later when he left with the people of Israel? Well, we really don't know, other than the book of Exodus very clearly says the first time Moses left, he was afraid. And here it says he's not afraid. So I suspect, I'm not sure, but I suspect this is talking about when Moses left with the children of Israel and crossed the Red Sea. How did Moses endure in the face of this danger and extreme trial? The Bible tells us he looked to the invisible God. Exodus 14. When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. They were looking at the Egyptians. They weren't looking at God. They were looking at the Egyptians. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord, and Moses said to the people, "Fear not. Stand firm and see the salvation of the Lord, and he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again." So who do you want to be identified with? Who do you fear? What peer group strikes fear into your heart? Are you more concerned about what people in your class at school, what people in around the water cooler at the office think, than what the God of Israel thinks? Moses understood that God reigns. He could see the Lord. What abuse would you endure for Jesus' name? If you stand for Jesus in the locker room or in the classroom or in the boardroom, sooner or later you're going to pay a price. And the way that you weather the storm, the way that you stand secure, the way that you endure in the face of abuse, is by seeing God who is invisible. There is a God who sits on the throne, who reigns and who rules, and has the king Pharaoh in the palm of his hand. I must not fear. Number four, faith worships the only true God who can save. Faith worships the only one who can save. Verse 28. By faith, he, that is Moses, kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. Now, this is talking about the very first Passover. And as the children of Israel were getting ready to leave, God sent the final plague, which killed all the firstborn of the people of Egypt. And the Lord told them to take blood and to sprinkle the blood on the doorpost and the lintels of the houses, their houses. And he says, this blood that you put on your homes, on the door frame of your houses, shall be a sign for you. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague shall fall upon you or destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. Because of their faith, because they were willing to sacrifice to and worship the one true God, sacrifice their lamb, which was a significant offering for people who were slaves and had nothing to their own possession except mud bricks. Significant sacrifice. The children of Israel were guarded from the destroying angel who killed all the firstborn of Egypt. Isn't it amazing? Here you have a people who were enslaved, beaten, oppressed, defeated, hopeless, and they came to the God of Israel, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and they placed all of their hope of rescue in him. And here now, we are enslaved to sin, defeated by our destroyer, the devil. A price must be paid, and God offers his firstborn. God offers the Lamb, his only begotten Son, who has sprinkled his blood for us. For God presented Jesus is a sacrifice for sin. People are made right with God when they believe that Jesus sacrificed his life, shedding his blood for us. Faith worships this God, the only God who can save. Fifth characteristic of this enduring faith, faith walks boldly, knowing God miraculously delivers his people. This kind of enduring faith is bold because we know that God can and does and will work miracles. Verse 29 to 31. By faith, the people of Israel crossed the Red Sea as on dry land. But the Egyptians, when they attempted to do the same, were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. By faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. Now, there's three sets of individuals here, or three groups. Number one, Israel in the Red Sea is first in verse 29. And in many ways, this is the defining event of Israel's past. God gave birth to a nation on that day. And as imperfect as they were, filled with unbelief, doubting God, but they were a nation. The people were afraid. Their backs were to the wall. They were staring death in the face. They said, "We want to go back to Egypt." And God told Moses to divide the sea and thin the people through on dry ground. "I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they shall go in after them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his host, his chariots, his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen." God says, "I'm going to do a great miracle, an awesome work, and they will all know that I'm God." Then there's this story of Joshua and Jericho, verse 30, which you heard in Sunday school as you were a child. They come to Jericho, and they're ready to set a siege, and the people inside are prepared to stay in there for years if necessary. And there's every reason to think that there is no way, humanly speaking, they could have conquered Jericho. And God said, "I've got another plan. I want you to get the marching band together. We're going to go on a parade." And they went around the city 7 times. By faith, they obeyed. Not because of the human achievability of the command, but because of the reliability of the one who promised them, "You go, I'll deal with the problem." They trusted God, the walls fell down, and they took the city of Jericho. By faith they obeyed because they knew that it would take a miracle to conquer this city. And there's one who can do it. And in verse 31, you have the story of Rahab and the spies. And what's amazing about this is Rahab is a woman. She is a Gentile woman. She is a Gentile woman who happens to be a prostitute. And the spies come to her house and they're looking for a place to hide, a way of escape. And she hid the spies on her roof. And listen to what she said to them. Here's where her faith shines bright. "I know," Rahab says, "I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you, because we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. Listen to this. For the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath." She knew the God of Israel, and she placed faith in him. And I would rather identify with these foreign people, these Jews, these Israel, because their God is the one true God. He is the God of heaven. He is the God of earth. And I want to place my stake in him, rest my life in him. Now, the point of these three verses is pretty simple. Faith acts on the assumption that God will keep his promises even if he has to act supernaturally to fulfill them. Through our faith, God can and does work miracles and acts of providential glory in order to bring practical earthly help and deliver his people. Now, quite often, God works behind the scenes. Sometimes he operates out in the open doing amazing acts of power. And what Rahab is saying by her faith, and what all of these individuals here is saying, I know who God is, I expect God to act, and I will step out in faith. Say, well, you know, I grew up in a rationalistic age, and I believe in science. I believe that, you know, I don't believe it unless I can see it. And this whole talk of miracles and the supernatural, you need to encounter the God of the Bible. 2 Corinthians 10, for the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and take every thought captive to obey Christ. You say, well, I don't know if my son or daughter can be saved. They're so hardened to the gospel. Do you believe that God works miracles? I don't know if God can heal. I don't know if he can deliver. I don't know if he can provide. This is God we're talking about here. The creator of heaven and earth, the one who made you in his image and likeness for his own glory. So what do we learn from verse 23 to 31? I think you could put it in a simple phrase. Don't waste your crisis. Every crisis comes into your life for a purpose and for a reason. Faith that endures life crises results from knowing that God's reward is greater than the storm, and he's the one in whom I'm going to trust. For my own benefit, I've kind of summarized in five thoughts here what it means to not waste your crisis in the light of Hebrews 11. Number one, it tells me to look first to God's promises. Look first to God's promises. Psalm 119:50. This is my comfort in my affliction, that your promise gives me life. God made lots of promises to Moses. They're at the bush in Midian. And God says to Moses over and over again, he says, I heard, I see, I know, and I will deliver. I will bring them to a good and broad land flowing with milk and honey, and they will worship me on the mountain. And for the next 40 years, Moses staked his entire life on those promises. He was about to go into a crisis that would blow his mind. He rested on that. God said he heard. God said he knows. God made promises that he's going to take them out and going to bring them to the land of promise flowing with milk and honey. I'm going to trust. Number two, set your vision on God's reward. Set your vision on God's reward. If you want to endure through the crisis, you need to be like Abraham, who came to see that this present world has no foundations. You need to be like Moses, who realizes that all the treasures of Egypt, well, they might seem great for a while, but they won't last. If you build your life on your looks, well, you're going to lose them. You're going to lose them. If you build your life on your intellect, at some point, everything you know now is going to be passé. I'm getting old enough now that all the stuff I learned in college 30 years ago is kind of out of date. I'm somewhat irrelevant. Everything you know is going to be gone. What's the foundation of your life? If your foundation is your family, sooner or later, they're going to leave or die they're not going to be there. God says again and again and again in the crisis, don't put the center of gravity in your life, of your life, on that, on those things. Shift the center of gravity of your life to me, says God. So what do you have your security built on? What is your heart focused on? It is a mercy to us when God brings a crisis to shift our foundation. Oh, my foundation is my health. My foundation is my wealth. My foundation is my relationships. And God brings that crisis and He shakes those foundations of those things that we hold so precious and so dear to our hearts in order to shift the foundation and the center of gravity of our life to Him. Third, what we learn from the example of faith here in Hebrews 11 is work out the best course of action in the midst of a crisis. Don't waste your crisis. In the midst of crisis, work out the best course of action based on the twin realities that God exists and He rewards faith. Now, where am I going with this? This is really very important. I know that's a mouthful, but I want you to see why this is so important. Verse 19 says, Abraham considered that God. He thought about who God is and what God does, and then he offered up his only son as a sacrifice. Verse 26, Moses considered. He had to make a huge choice between wealth and power that he had been raised to embrace and identification with God's people. He considered, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? All the wealth and power of Egypt to be identified with a bunch of slaves. He thought about it, and then he made his choice. In the crisis, what exactly you need to do is to step back and to appraise what is really important in the light of eternity. What really matters. 1,000 years from now, what will really matter? When all that I see and love and embrace here on earth is gone, what will really, really matter? And both Moses and Abraham, they worked it out. They processed it based on the twin realities, Hebrews 11, 1, God exists and He rewards faith. There is a God in heaven above. He rules this universe. He created me for His own image and glory. And He rewards faith. He makes promises. He reveals Himself. He makes promises. And He keeps them. Number four, reject the response of fear. That's one uniform characteristic of faith that we see working down through this passage. Why should I fear infertility? Why should I fear opposition? Why should I fear sacrifice? Why should I fear a broken up relationship? Why should I fear the unknown when I have faith? And then number five, boldly act in faith for the glory of God. You look to God's promises, set your vision on God's reward, work out the best course of action based on who God is and what He has promised us, reject the response of fear, and boldly act in faith for the glory of God. The reason is because this kind of enduring faith, the kind of faith that stays steady through the storm, results from knowing that God's reward is greater than any crisis that will hit you. So here's the key. Hebrews 11 is all about enduring, isn't it? End of chapter 10, endure. Beginning of chapter 12, endure. All of Hebrews 11, even though the key word is faith, it's all about enduring. And I think here's the phrase that you and I ought to walk home with from Hebrews 11, 23 to 31. By faith, Moses endured as seeing Him who is invisible. Moses had been raised with his eyes on stuff, his eyes on power, and God changed his vision, and he endured. Will you endure? Will you rest in the finished work of Jesus Christ who shed His blood on the cross for sinners just like you and I? Will you rest on the reigning God who is in heaven above, who controls everything for His own glory? Let's stand together. You are our great Savior and Lord. And when we are in the midst of the storm, Father, sometimes it's easy for us to do like the children of Israel did, to take our eyes off of You, take our eyes off of the promise, and look at put them on the Egyptians, on the enemies around us, the things which frighten us. Help us, Lord, to consider who You are, to work out your great power and your glory and the truth of your promises and the reward which you have for us, and keep our vision on Christ, fixed firmly and securely on the only one who can save. For it's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.